ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
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 Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, founder Acharya of ISKCON. We'll read from chapter 16, text number 5. Daivi sampad vimokshaya nibandhaya surimata mashucha sampadam daivim abhijato si pandava. Lord Krishna covers many topics of spiritual knowledge in synopsis. Means briefly. In this chapter, Lord Krishna describes the divine and demoniac qualities. Basically, what are the qualities of good people and what are the qualities of bad people. In the next verse, Lord Krishna explains, Vobhuta sargo lokesmin daiva asura evacha. There are two kinds of people in this world. One is called godly and the other is called demoniac. This is further explained in the... which Purana? Padma Purana. Vishnu bhakta smrito daiva asuras tad viparyayaha. That those who are devotees of Krishna, they are called godly, and asuras or demons, they have just the opposite qualities. So actually in the first few verses of this chapter, the divine qualities of saintly people are described. And in the rest of the chapter, the bad qualities of demoniac people are discussed. The bad qualities of demons are, in the previous verse, they have been summarized. Dambho, darpa, vimanascha, krodha parishum evacha agyana cha bijatasya partha sampadam asuram. You can try and translate. So we see that some people, they are attracted to the divine qualities and some people are attracted to the demoniac qualities. The divine qualities, of course, there are many. They are based upon devotion to Krishna. Such qualities as cleanliness, purification of one's existence, a firm belief in God, this dedication of one's life to purification, humility, pridelessness, modesty, is alampatya, not hankering after others' wives. These are qualities of divine people. But the demons are just opposite. And those who are demoniac, they actually take pleasure in being nasty. Srila Prabhupada once explained how he remembers seeing in Calcutta that in a restaurant, how one man was cutting the head of the chicken and he was taking pleasure in giving the chicken pain. And I remember also seeing in... I was coming once, and this is just a small incident, but it's typical of the cruelty that is common in the modern world. That I had come back from a preaching tour of one island off the coast of Bangladesh. And the ship that we came back on, so many chickens in these big baskets, they were kept, they were being sent from the island to the mainland for selling. So these baskets, these big baskets with the live chickens inside, they would throw them from the ship onto the dock. And naturally all the chickens, their bones were broken and they were making so much sound of pain. But the people who were throwing them, they didn't care at all. And I'm sure you, living in this country in the last few years, you know many stories of cruelty much more than this. And some people, they actually take pleasure in giving pain to others. For them, that is a kind of sport or entertainment. They take pleasure in seeing others in pain. So it seems inconceivable how people could be so bad. How is that possible? The root cause of this bad nature is envy of Krishna. Everyone, every living being is meant to love Krishna. But when someone becomes envious of Krishna, then there is no limit to that envy. Every living being in his original nature takes pleasure in serving Krishna and giving pleasure to Krishna. But when that love of Krishna becomes perverted, it turns into envy. And that envy of Krishna expands into a big tree of bad desires. All these kind of desires, just like the desire to dominate over others, to increase one's own prestige, to show oneself to be strong and powerful. These desires all spring from envy of Krishna, because Krishna is the supreme controller, we want to imitate him. Now we see that some people, they are attracted to these demoniac qualities, and other people, they find that horrible. They have a different kind of nature. Once one devotee told me that he asked a question of Srila Prabhupada. He told me that previously he was working in a steel mill. He told this to Prabhupada, that they had to work in very, it was very hot and very dark and very dirty and very noisy, and all day he had to pick up these big sheets of steel and carry them from one place to another. And he told Prabhupada that, "Prabhupada, I found that horrible, but the other people there seem to like it. How is that?" Prabhupada said, "You're a Brahmin in your last life. So what seems appealing to one kind of person is not to another." Now in the list of divine qualities, Lord Krishna has mentioned one of them, sattva sangshuddhi, means purification of existence. A person who is more intelligent must be thoughtful. Of course, intelligence in the modern age is mostly misused. Intelligence is used to make different kinds of weapons, or how to control others by political maneuvers. Many of the more developed brains in the world, they use their intelligence to make horrible experiments upon animals. So when we as devotees of Krishna talk about intelligence, we don't mean simply some kind of misused material intellectual ability, but we are referring to that introspective intelligence by which a person considers what is the purpose of life. As stated in Vedanta Sutra, Atato Brahma Jigyasa, now in the human form of life, we should inquire into the Absolute Truth. So this kind of inquiry is a sign of developed and purified intelligence. If a person asks, "Who am I? What is the purpose of life? Who is God? Is there God? What is our relationship with Him? What is the nature of God? Why is there suffering in the world? How can we get free from that?" So these kind of questions qualify one as an actually developed human being. So an intelligent person should try to understand why everything is going on as it is, and what is our duty, why we should act. Just like several of you are studying physics. So physics and other branches of science, the physicists try to find out what is the cause of particular effects. The question why seeks to be answered, and the question how seeks to be answered. A transcendentalist takes this question why to its fullest limit, to the understanding of the ultimate cause of the universe. The ultimate cause of the universe is not a Big Bang or solid state theory or any such thing. But the ultimate cause of the universe is the wrong desires of the living beings. Exactly how the universe, the physical method by which the universe came into being is not as important to understand as why this world of suffering exists at all. Actually, we understand that this universe is created by God. But why should He create it? Because we, the living beings, desired it. A wrong kind of desire. Because we desired to enjoy separately from God. So an introspective person tries to understand these things. These matters can be understood by studying the Vedic literature under the direction of a spiritual master. And then, sattva sangshuddhi, he acts in such a way that he may become purified. Understanding that for every action, there is an equal and opposite reaction. This is not simply on the atomic or on the chemical level or the physical or the atomic level, but that is a fact of the laws of karma also. It actually, we see that scientists, they study, we can say the three main branches of science is physics, chemistry and biology, and of course mathematics is the basis of physics. But scientists have, up till now, they haven't begun to understand how the laws of nature affect our whole existential position. That scientists, they understand that everything in nature, they try to understand what are the causes and effects. But why are we here at all? That they have not even tried to find out. Generally, it's not that all scientists reject religion. There are many who scientists are also religious to some level. But they tend to think that religion and science are two different compartments. But actually, Krishna consciousness is known as the science of God. Many times when Srila Prabhupada used to ask, what does your religion teach? Prabhupada would say, it is not a religion, it is a science. What did Srila Prabhupada mean by that? Because generally when we say religion, we think of a system of belief. Belief that can change. A Christian may become a Muslim, or a Hindu may become a Christian. Religion gives the word religion gives the idea of something based upon one's own belief. Whereas science conveys the import of established facts. Of course, many of the supposed to be facts in science, later on they find out that actually it wasn't correct after all. But people in the modern age have a lot of faith in science, because the propaganda is presented that science deals with facts. Although a lot of times it just deals with beliefs. Just like evolutionary theory is a belief, it's not a proven fact. And all these theories, Big Bang theory, it's a belief. No one can prove its correctness or its non-correctness. Because sitting here on this tiny planet, billions of years after the event, how are you going to say what happened, how the universe came into existence? Yes. By studying rocks or by making mathematical theories based upon the observed movement of the stars, you can't tell what happened millions of years ago, billions of years ago. The other day, someone showed me a map of India. There's some note underneath it that 50 million years ago, India separated from the African landmass. So what do they know what happened 50 million years ago? They're only guessing. They don't know what happened 50 million years ago. But they write it as if it's a fact. But it's only a guess. This is typical of cheating in science. Some years ago, I saw a magazine, a popular science magazine, in which they said that they believe life arrived on this planet by meteorites. Because all their theories of evolution, they're one by one being proved to be impossible. So they made up some theory that life must have arrived by meteorites. So in the first paragraph they wrote that scientists now believe that life arrived on this planet by meteorites. Which scientists and based upon what evidence, they didn't say. But then they wrote a whole long essay that it arrived by meteorites and then this happened, that happened, this happened, that happened, as if it was a fact. But it was all based upon the first sentence that scientists now believe, which is not a fact, it's only a guess. So anyway, in the presentation of science, there is a lot of dogmatism like this. That science deals with facts, but in many cases it deals with guesswork. Just to give another example, we could go on and on, but I'll give one more example. That I was reading about 2 years ago, I was reading that different astrophysicists in the world, they have more than, between them, they have more than 100 theories of the origin of the universe. Now, how many astrophysicists are there in the world anyway? Probably not that many more than, I mean, those who are at a level of being able to give a theory of the origin of the universe, there's probably not more than 100 anyway. That means that everyone has their own theory, which means that they don't know, actually. So one astrophysicist got together with a statistician, and they analyzed all these different theories. And the best of them, they gave 1 in 10,000 chance of having any possibility of being possible at all. So anyway, the point I'm making is that science is presented as if it is factual. And that is the real meaning of science, although in the modern world, science has come to mean, in many cases, it means speculation. There is a word in Sanskrit for science, the word is vigyan. It means special knowledge, or realized knowledge, or absolutely correct factual knowledge. Now, the point I was making, Srila Prabhupada says that Krishna consciousness is a science, and that is described here in Bhagavad Gita. We'll find the word vigyan, science, used several times. And particularly in Srimad Bhagavatam, it is defined Bhagavat Tattva Vigyana. This is the science of knowledge of God. Bhagavat Tattva means the different categories of knowledge of God. In other words, how God creates the universe, how He maintains it, what is the nature of God. This is another thing. People think that religion is just something you can just imagine as you like. People think, just like in Life magazine a few years ago, there was an international survey, they asked different people, what do you think is God? So different people gave their theories. Many people said God is goodness, or God is light. But the whole approach, that as if God is dependent upon our opinion of Him. The whole approach is most unscientific and non-factual. The Srimad Bhagavatam doesn't give such a vague, speculative idea of God. In the Bhagavat philosophy, this Bhagavat Tattva Vijnana, everything is defined clearly. It is not that God is dependent upon our opinion. Rather, the nature of God, God has His own specific nature which distinguishes Him from all other living beings. God means supreme. Asamurdhva, the word is given in Sanskrit. Nothing or nobody is equal to Him or greater than Him. And particularly the word is given Bhagavan. The word for God, in your language, Boga, I think it is.
Bog,
yeah. In Russian it's Boga. Then that comes from the Sanskrit Bhagavan. So every word in Sanskrit, it's not just some word, just like book or glass, but every word has a specific, definitive meaning. Now, there are different terms that can be used for God, but the most definitive term is the word Bhagavan, which means who is complete with six opulences. Aishvaryasya, Samagrasya, Viryasya, Yashasya, Shriya, Jnana, Vairagya, Yaschaiva, Shannang, Bhaga, Itingina. There are six bhagas, or six opulences, which define God. That He has all wealth, everything belongs to Him. All power, all fame, all beauty, all knowledge, and all renunciation. This makes God supreme. If anyone has all these qualities, he can be understood to be God. And such a person becomes attractive to others. Just like if a person has a lot of money, people are attracted to him. If you have money, you have friends. You become famous. Who are the rich people of the world? Rockefeller, Rothschild, these are famous. Why? What is their great quality? They have money. So, Aishvarya says to Magyasa, who is powerful, he becomes famous. Just like the names Bill Clinton, Bill Yeltsin. These are famous names all over the world. Because they are powerful, politically powerful. Or someone who is physically powerful, like this Mike Tyson. He is famous because he has a big body like a buffalo. So he's become famous because he's powerful. Yashasa. For any reason, if someone becomes famous, then he becomes attractive. Attractive in the sense that people want to know about him. Shriya, one who is beautiful, people become attracted. In the modern age, this attraction, bodily beauty, has been grossly overemphasized. So that everything is advertised in the notice board showing some beautiful woman. Things like toothpaste, cigarettes, which have got nothing to do with beautiful. The psychology is if you smoke this cigarette, then the beautiful woman will come. But it's bogus because you can smoke a cigarette all 24 hours a day non-stop. No beautiful woman's going to come. But anyway, the point is that beauty is attractive. Knowledge is attractive. We know the names of Einstein, Galileo. These are great learned people. In the modern age, Stephen Hawking, the great demon, atheist. Because he's supposed to be learned. Or someone who's very renounced, they also become attractive. Not very much in the modern materialistic society, but at least in India, if someone is very renounced from this material world, people very much respect them. So these six qualities are attractive. Just like we see one Rockefeller or Rothschild is attractive because he has a lot of money. Now, what if someone had not only a little money on a little planet like this, but he happened to be the proprietor of all the universes? That is Bhagavan. He owns everything. Even Mr. Rockefeller is thinking, I have millions of dollars. Or even we here are thinking, I have some money in my pocket. But actually, it all belongs to God. Nothing belongs to us. So God is the richest of all. In this way, if we analyze, we'll see that God, He is the richest of all, the most powerful, the most beautiful, the most learned, the most renowned, the most famous, to a superlative degree. To a degree which none of us can even slightly match. So in this way, Bhagavan means the person with all opulences in full. And therefore he becomes attractive, and therefore his name is Krishna. Krishna means all attractive. So everything is very scientifically defined, very clearly, exactly how the material world comes into being. Maya dyakshena prakriti suyate sacharacharam. That comes into being under the direction of Krishna. How it is maintained that Lord Vishnu, by his plenary portion as Paramatma or Supersoul, enters into every atom. In physics, we study the different energies and how they interact, how everything is moving within this world. This world is called Jagat. It means in which everything is constantly moving. Modern research in physics suggests that everything is always moving. Everything, even at the subatomic level, everything is constantly in motion. So that Sanskrit word is already there, Jagat. It means that which is always moving. So how is it moving? We are studying different laws of motion and of chemical reaction. But how have these laws come into being? And how are they sustained? That is because of Bhagavan. Because God enters into everything, therefore this tremendously complex arrangement is going on. And because the whole arrangement is going on under His supervision and is completely under His control, therefore God can break the laws of physics. He's not under the laws of physics. He's not under the laws of karma. Therefore, when we hear about things, just like we hear about Krishna, if we read his pastimes, we'll hear many wonderful things. That Krishna, for instance, once he took Arjuna on his chariot and went through the coverings of the universe and eventually went to the planet or went to the place where Mahavishnu resides. Or we will read how one time Krishna was playing with his friends as a young boy, and all the boys complained to Mother Yashoda that Krishna has been eating dirt. And Krishna said, "No, it's not true, they're just making stories about me." So Mother Yashoda said, "All right, let me look and see inside your mouth." So when she looked inside Krishna's mouth, she saw all the planets and all the universes. And she also saw herself looking inside Krishna's mouth. So then she told Krishna, "All right, don't eat clay anymore." So this may sound like a entertaining story, and it is a very pleasing story for the devotees to hear. But the non-devotees will have no faith or no interest in such stories. They will say that these are simply stories for simplistic-minded people. They will say it's not very scientific. But actually this is the topmost science, that Krishna, it's a fact, all the universes are within Him. And although it seems to be beyond the laws of physics that the whole universe can be seen within Krishna's mouth, if He wants, He can show all the universes within His mouth. It would seem to be a very simple principle of physics that something which is bigger than one object which is bigger than the other cannot go inside it. So what to speak of the whole universe going within Krishna's mouth, when Krishna just appears to be a small boy? But Krishna is showing that everything is possible for Him. And this understanding of Krishna's ability to control and even defy the laws of nature brings us to the level of metaphysics. To understand the inconceivable potency behind everything, that is metaphysics. An actual scientist must be amazed at the tremendous order within nature. Just like in mathematics, you'll find so many different amazing patterns. How the numbers relate with each other and interact with each other, it seems to be almost mystical. And how everything in the universe, all these different energies interact, and we see everything is going on in order, it seems to be almost mystical. It is mystical in the sense that it is beyond our tiny brain power to understand. To say everything is happening by chance is a great cop-out. I don't know how you're going to translate cop-out. It's just completely avoiding the issue. In science, you're studying cause and effect and order. This is the meaning of science. If in the science, in the examination, if you're asked which chemicals should you interact and how to produce soap? So if you answer, well, you just throw any chemicals together in any way and probably by chance some soap will come out, you'll fail your exam, because it's not a fact. Not just by chance that you throw any chemicals together and soap comes out. Everything must be the right chemicals in the right strength, in the right quantity, at the right temperature, at the right pressure. You interact them and you get soap. So seeing order at every level of reality, if we say that ultimately everything has come into being by chance, it's just completely avoiding the issue. At every level, you find here is the effect, let us find the cause. Okay, now this cause is also an effect of something else. What is the cause of that? So you're going deeper and deeper to subatomic level, and you're trying to find out what is the cause of the universe. And then ultimately, and then you say, ultimately, there's no cause. It's all by chance. It's not scientific. Scientific means we should find out what is the original cause. And that is described in Brahma Samhita, succinctly, Sarva Karana Karanam, Ishvara Parama Krishna Satira Ananda Vigraha, Anadir Adir Govinda Sarva Karana Karanam. In four lines, gives a definition of God. Ishvara Parama, the supreme controller is Krishna. He has internal form of bliss and knowledge. He is not caused by anything, rather he is the cause of everything. He is the ultimate cause of all causes. So science means to find out what is the ultimate cause. But actually you can't find out what is the ultimate cause by investigation. Just like that point, how has the universe come into existence? How can we hope to find out millions of billions of years after the event? Here we are on one tiny planet in a vast universe, and we hardly have any real idea of how the universe is going on anyway, or what is going on in the universe outside the tiny little solar system we're living in. And we hope to give some theory about how the universe came into existence. It's highly overambitious even to begin to think that we can find out. Just like, for instance, if you don't know who your father and mother is. Here you are, you're 20 years old, let's say, and you're living in the world. You have no idea where you were born or who your parents are. How are you going to find out? It would be a very difficult job. You have no relations, no idea, nothing. You don't know anything about your past life. So that's only 20 years ago. Then what to speak of something that happened millions of years ago? It has a 1 in 10,000 chance of being right. So this Krishna consciousness is based on Vedic knowledge, Vedic science, which it takes an appropriate means to find out. The appropriate means is that we can't find out by our own speculation. Matters that are beyond our power to find out. So that kind of knowledge, particularly this kind of knowledge, we should find out by hearing from someone who knows. That is the meaning of Vedic knowledge. Actually, Veda means knowledge. The Vedic literatures give us knowledge that we cannot possibly find out by any advancement of material science. For instance, what is the nature of the soul? You cannot find out the nature of the soul by any scientific investigation. Because the nature of the soul is that it is a completely different nature to anything material. It is spiritual. So you can't find the soul by a microscope or by any such material means. We have to take up a spiritual process to understand the spiritual energy. Similarly, to understand God, we can't, by looking through a telescope or a microscope or any kind of scope, you're not going to find God. But there is a means to understand God. We have to adopt the correct means. Just like, for instance, to gain scientific knowledge, there are different kind of instruments. Within different branches of science, you use Bunsen burner, litmus paper, scalpel, and all different kinds of instruments. But you have to know which instruments to apply in which investigations. If you want to study geology and rock formation, then there's no use to bring litmus paper and a prism. You dig out some rocks and you stick a prism on top of it. What are you going to find out? You have to apply the correct methodology. Similarly, if you want to find out about history, in any branch, there is a certain methodology. In any branch of knowledge, if you want to find out about the history you have of what happened 200 years ago, you have to consult books and journals written at that time. If you want to understand how a person, what is the nature of the disease that a person died from, you may cut his body and do an autopsy and examine different malignant growths and all this kind of thing. So every branch of knowledge has a particular methodology by which to pursue it. So spiritual knowledge also. People who say that spiritual knowledge is unscientific, they are unscientific, because they think that we will have to apply a material means to understand it. It means they only have knowledge of material science, they don't have knowledge of spiritual science. But there is a methodology to understand spiritual knowledge. And if we follow it, we can develop spiritual knowledge. Just like to understand physics, there is a systematic manner to approach it. you have to go through many years of study, beginning in the school, 1 plus 1 equals 2. Gradually you develop knowledge of mathematics, and then that is applied within physics, and gradually this subject can be understood. Similarly, there is a method to approach spiritual science. But it's not that you just understand it just like that. People say, oh, show me God. Prove the existence of God. As if it's just something like this, you can understand immediately. But that's not a very scientific approach. We can prove the existence of God, but you have to become qualified to understand the proof. Just like you can say, prove the existence of subatomic particles. Okay, there's a methodology to prove it. But unless you're a qualified physicist, even if you see the experiment, you can't understand it. The experiment will take place. You say, well, I didn't see any subatomic particles. Because you don't know what's going on in the experiment. You haven't been trained to understand. And to back up that which is experimentally shown, there will be so many mathematical calculations. But if I'm a skeptic, I'll say, well, that's just a bunch of writing. It doesn't mean anything. So in the same way, we can show the existence of God. But you have to be trained to understand what you see. We will give books which definitively explain this. But you have to take the training to understand the knowledge in these books. This is spiritual science. It can be understood. It's straightforward, it's clear. And by understanding it, all other branches of knowledge become put clearly in focus. Now, being a spiritual science, this spiritual science has special qualities. Because it acts upon the spirit soul, that means all of us. And one who takes to this spiritual process, he has to become purified even to enter into it. Unless a person becomes purified, he cannot begin to enter into spiritual knowledge. And as a person takes up the spiritual process, he becomes more and more purified. So a spiritually advanced person can be understood by his qualities. Becoming spiritually qualified doesn't mean simply to be able to explain some verses from Bhagavad Gita. But such a person will develop the spiritual qualities of God also. Not that he will become as great as God, but he will acquire the spiritually attractive qualities of God, such as kindness, compassion, cleanliness, equanimity of mind, and so on. So in this chapter it's being described, what is the nature of a godly person? And what is the nature of a demoniac person? It is very much required that people take this knowledge. Because in the modern age, there is so much demoniac propaganda. At the end of this chapter, Lord Krishna describes that there are three gates leading to hell. Trividham narakasyedam dwaram nashanam atmanaham kama krodhas tatha lobhas tasmat etat triyantyajet. Lord Krishna says that lust, greed and anger are the three gates leading to hell. Lust, greed and anger. Therefore, an intelligent person should try to give these things up. But we see that in the modern age, these three things are being promoted more and more and more. Just like I was saying, all the advertisements, they show, buy this toothpaste. Why? Because a beautiful girl is smiling in the advertisement. Simply promoting lust and greed. Buy this, buy this, buy something else. Unless you have a first-class car, you're not considered very important. And you have to dress in... What is this? These Nike shoes and Levi jeans and Ray-Ban sunglasses, which are all very expensive. So this increases people's greed for the sake of prestige. They have to show off these things. And the natural outcome of lust and greed is anger. That's also promoted through all the TV and cinema. So much violence is being promoted. And the whole modern society is based on violence. Massive slaughter of animals. Heartless abortion of children. And therefore, such horrible things as have happened in this country recently can happen. Because when the lust, greed and anger increase more and more, people lose all sense of discrimination. And they can do anything horrible without any consideration and take pleasure in it. They will take pleasure in just absolutely horrible things which should not be spoken about because they have become so much demoniac. So our Krishna Consciousness Movement is particularly appealing to the intelligent class of people whose intelligence is being misdirected into lust, greed and anger. That we are appealing especially to the intelligent class of people because the intelligent class of people are naturally supposed to be the leaders of the others. That please use your intelligence to peacefully, introspectively understand the science of God. and develop the godly qualities. Instead of turning this world into hell, we can turn this world into just like the spiritual world. The spiritual world is called Vaikuntha. The predominant symptom of Vaikuntha is that there is no envy. Nobody hates anybody else. Everybody loves everybody else because they love Krishna. If we put Krishna in the center, then that love for Krishna will expand to all other living beings. So we're presenting this. This is not a sentiment. This is the science of knowledge of God. Please try to understand it with your good intelligence, which is given by God, and teach this to others. It is vital that this knowledge of Krishna consciousness be spread in the world. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Is there any question? So you speak it in what language is that? Bosnian?
You can speak in English and I'll translate it easier.
Okay, all right.
Something you say doesn't add up. Something contradicts for me. If God is all-powerful, beautiful and wealthy and all that stuff, why shouldn't I emulate God and try to be a real good-looking guy? Why shouldn't I emulate Upanishad?
Why shouldn't he also have the same quality? You do have that quality.
Why shouldn't I emulate God and be good-looking? If I want to be like God, why wouldn't I do that?
Yeah, well, naturally you do have that quality. Every living being is by nature, in quality, the same as God. Our natural position is to be beautiful and happy in all respects. But the reason that we suffer in this material world is because we try to have these qualities in competition with God. Everyone in the spiritual world is endowed with the qualities of God, but because they all have the attitude of servitude to God, which is our actual position. We are very tiny living beings and we are infinitesimal and God is infinitely great. But because we are part and parcel of God, we naturally have the same qualities as God. Just like a drop of water has the same quality as the ocean. If you analyze what is the chemical constitution of one drop of ocean water, you will find it has the same nature as the totality of the ocean. I don't know exactly, it may be 97% water, and the remaining 3% different salts, mostly sodium chloride. So that is the nature of the drop, and that is also the nature of the whole ocean. But still, a drop is a drop, and the ocean is the ocean. So we also have the same nature as God, but we are very small, and God is very great. But actually, all the living beings in the Vaikuntha planets, they look the same as God, almost exactly the same. But they always remain in a happy mode of servitude to God. But when we try to become equal with God, it becomes an impossible situation. And therefore, this material world is here. That God gives us the chance to act out that fantasy of becoming supreme. And everyone is in competition with everyone else, trying to be better than everyone else. And trying to put others down and put himself up. And in the process, everyone is inflicting suffering on others. And as a result, they get karmic reactions of sometimes in different births, not being very beautiful, or another birth being more beautiful. But actually you become beautiful when you take to Krishna consciousness. And we actually see this, that anyone who takes to Krishna consciousness, their physical features become beautiful. Whereas a so-called beautiful person of this material world, that beauty, it's actually not very attractive. The beauty of a so-called beautiful woman, it's only attractive on a very low, lusty level. But the beauty of a Krishna conscious person, his physical features may not be, from the external point of view, very attractive. But because he's shining with the spiritual luster, he becomes attractive to those of purified mentality. In our Krishna conscious movement, we like to keep many pictures of Srila Prabhupada. From the external point of view, Srila Prabhupada might not be considered a very beautiful person. Because at least at the time when we were taking photos, he was old, and an old person is generally not considered to be very beautiful. In the advertisements, they have pictures of young women, not old women. They don't have, smoke this cigarette and a 90-year-old woman will come. So we have pictures of Srila Prabhupada, an old person. But when we see that picture, we think, oh, Srila Prabhupada looks so beautiful. That is the spiritual beauty of the soul shining through. So what is actually beauty? That also requires some purification to understand. And a devotee, he becomes the richest person. He may not have many, what's the local currency here?
Dinars.
He may not have many dinars. or dollars or whatever, but he's rich in his heart because he can be satisfied even with very little. Whereas a Rothschild or a Rockefeller, they're not satisfied. Even they have billions and zillions of dollars, but they're not satisfied. So who is actually the richest person? The person who has millions of dollars and is not satisfied, or the person who has very little but is satisfied simply to chant the names of Krishna? So a devotee of Krishna is the richest. He's also the most famous. Devotee doesn't care for fame, but those who are great devotees, they become the most famous. Just like you see famous people of this material world, just like Jimmy Carter. Remember that name? Some time ago he was maybe one of the most famous men in the world. Who cares for him now? In 1,000 years, probably his name won't even be in any book. But the great devotees, they are remembered even thousands and millions of years later. Like Prahlad Maharaj or Dhruva Maharaj, because of their tremendous character in love of God, they are remembered even up to now. Because they're actually the greatest personalities. It's one kind of greatness to be a big political leader. But that's not actual greatness. It's just like you see a group of dogs get together, who can bark the loudest is the biggest dog. So the same thing with politicians, they all get together, and who can manipulate the best, might is right, he becomes the president or whatever. So that's not a very laudable greatness. But someone who can sacrifice everything for Krishna, his qualities are so great that they're remembered eternally. And all attractive qualities, just like you were saying, wealth, strength, fame, knowledge, beauty, renunciation. The devotee develops these far more than any materialistic person. Just like knowledge, there are so many big, big brains, Nobel Prizes, PhDs and all this. But a devotee, even if he's not materially well educated, is far more knowledgeable than any of these people. Because he has factual knowledge of the most essential topic. If a person knows, I'm not this body, I'm spirit soul, I'm the eternal servant of God, Krishna is God, his knowledge is complete and perfect. Whereas a person whose knowledge is only concerned with the combinations and permutations of this material world, then his actual knowledge is zero. It's extraneous knowledge, external knowledge. So a devotee becomes the most knowledgeable. And by the grace of Krishna, who is within the heart, the devotee is enriched with all knowledge. Devotee becomes endowed with all knowledge. We see Srila Prabhupada went all over the world preaching Krishna consciousness. He met philosophers, scientists, politicians, journalists, scholars, all different kinds of people. And Prabhupada could answer all their questions on the basis of realized knowledge of Bhagavad Gita. So in all ways, a devotee becomes a wonderful person. But his most wonderful quality is his humility. Because even though he has developed all good qualities, he always thinks that I am very fallen and lowly. And if there is anything in me, that's only by the grace of Guru and Krishna. Whereas a materialistic person, if he has any slight opulence, such as wealth or money, he becomes so proud. So the desire to become beautiful or famous or wealthy outside of Krishna consciousness, it's actually demoniac. And that's the cause of our continued material existence. We're always struggling that let me be great, let me be powerful, let me show myself to be better than others. But we can never be better than Krishna. So if we simply accept that I'm subordinate to Krishna, then Krishna will give us so many transcendental opulences. Because we become qualified to take such transcendental opulences. Because we won't misuse them. And all the opulences, such as wealth, strength, knowledge, beauty, they are properly situated in a devotee. They are decorations on the personality of a devotee who knows how to use them properly in Krishna's service. Whereas if a non-devotee has wealth or beauty or knowledge or fame, he misuses these to exploit others. Abhakta. And it simply becomes the cause of suffering for himself and for others. That's why Krishna restrains. He doesn't give it. Because if a materialistic person, if they have great bodily beauty or a lot of money, they become proud and they go further and further away from understanding of God. Is there any other question?
Very often on our lectures we can hear about the importance to know what is our guna and karma. About gunas, it's described in Bhagavad Gita, but how to know what is our karma, but not from astrologers.
Guna and karma is described in the Bhagavad Gita in relationship to our present position within the three modes of material nature. and one's according to the modes of nature one has acquired, according to his previous activities, he is attracted to a particular type of work in this life. For instance, if one is endowed with brahminical qualities, such as peacefulness, self-control, cleanliness, etc., he will naturally be attracted to brahminical activities, and he is a suitable person for executing such brahminical activities, which are defined as study of scripture, teaching of scripture, patan, yajan, performing ceremonies and rituals in his own life and for the benefit of others, accepting charity and giving charity to others. Similarly, if one acquires the qualities of a kshatriya, such as Tejo Virya Dhritaksha, his qualities such as power, activity, very energetic, his determination, expertise, then he will a person with such qualities will naturally be attracted to administering others, protecting others. So guna and karma are interrelated. You said don't explain according to astrology, but traditionally astrology, in traditional Vedic society, astrology would be one of the prime means for ascertaining what a person's karma should be. Of course, nowadays it's very difficult to find a proper astrologer. Anyway, these different gradations of guna and karma are on the bodily platform, which we are on. But our aspiration is to go beyond the modes of material nature and come to the transcendental service of Krishna. Our spiritual quality is that we are, as Krishna is, eternal, full of bliss and knowledge. And our spiritual karma or activity is to serve Krishna. So in our Krishna conscious movement, we are training to come to that point. Someone else?
In Vaikuntha plants, you said that souls have the shape of Krishna. What's their shape in the material world?
In the material world, the soul is covered by a material body. In the material world, the soul has it doesn't have its original spiritual form. He has a form which is it becomes not visible, becomes very, very small. It's compared to its size is compared to that of 10,000th, the tip of a hair. That means if you take a hair, this end, and cut it 100 times and again 100 times, that's supposed to be the dimension of the soul. Although it cannot actually be materially described. Now, the soul spreads consciousness throughout the material body, just as the sun spreads light throughout the universe. But the soul has no actual connection with the material body. And therefore, material bodies are accepted and given up again and again. But when we become purified of material consciousness and stop identifying with these material bodies and come to our true identity as servants of Krishna, then again we develop our original spiritual form. Not all the forms are the same as Lord Vishnu, because different devotees have different desires. Not material desire, but they desire to serve Krishna in different ways. For instance, I'll just finish this. For instance, Krishna has many cows, so they give pleasure to Krishna by being cows, and they take pleasure in serving Krishna in that way. So there are many different kinds of forms in the spiritual world.
You already said what I meant to ask.
Yeah, but I was elaborating more. The subject matter is unlimited.
In the third canto of Srimad
Bhagavatam, you're reading, very good.
It is stated that the devotee should chant the holy name in certain method of counting. If I translated it correctly.
Did he translate it correctly? Okay. What does it mean?
She wants to
Is that the question?
What it means.
It means exactly what it says. You see we have these beads, and we chant on the beads. This is a method of counting. So the idea is that we have to repeatedly chant the holy names. Because by chanting, what happens is that by hearing the holy names again and again, our original spiritual taste for the holy names becomes awakened. But the system of counting is there so that we have a prescribed minimum. Because if we just do it according to our own wish, then being influenced by Maya then we'll do less and less and less. So a minimum is fixed up so that we don't neglect our chanting. So minimum means you have to count it to fix it. So that is the system. Lord Chaitanya also used to chant by counting, just to show us the example. But that doesn't mean that chanting is limited to counting. We should also practice chanting even beyond the counting. That means for initiated devotees or devotees aspiring for initiation, they should chant at least 16 rounds of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra every day. But we can chant more also. And we can chant in any circumstance. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, Kayate shuete jata tata naam loi, desha kaala niyam nahi sarva siddhi hoi. That in any circumstance, that even when we're eating, we can chant the holy names. Even when we're lying down to go to sleep, in any circumstance, if we chant the holy names, we can achieve all perfection. So it's a good habit to cultivate that chanting at any odd moment, just like if you're walking here and there. After eating, you have to wash the pots. You can chant at that time also. Whatever you're doing, when you're walking on the street, you can chant. Any other question?
In the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, in one verse it is stated how Lord Krishna liberated the king Riga, the son of Maharaj Ikshvaku. And having in mind the existence of Maharaj Ikshvaku 2 million years ago, the question is brought out to understand that time distance.
Well, you're a physicist, you can understand these things. That 1 year in one planet may be, according to its movement in relationship with the sun, then 1 year in one planet will be different to a year on this planet. You remember reading in the Srimad Bhagavatam in the 9th canto about Revat Maharaj, who went to the... He went to the planet of Brahma to ask him who is a suitable husband for his daughter. So at that time Lord Brahma was engaged in some other activity. So he told him, just wait a few moments. So he waited a few moments and then he asked, well, who is the right person to marry my daughter to? And Lord Brahma laughed. He said, in these few moments here, millions of your years have passed. Kakudmi was his name. Millions of your years have passed. That all the people who you are thinking of as possible candidates, not only have they died, but even there's no trace of their descendants. So he said, if you just go down now to the earth, you'll find Balaram is there. He's the best husband. So that's one consideration, that time scales are different in different planets, or even within different species. Just like we understand that previously on this planet, living humans used to live up to 100,000 years. And on other planets, they live lifetimes of many, many thousands of years. So we may wonder how that's possible. But then we consider that some living beings